You're listening to another great Torah class, recorded by TorahAnytime.com.
Once again, I would like to thank Rav David Solomon for inviting me to come to speak to all of you. It's very choshev, every single person that's here, but there's some that I feel very close to, Chazon Shar from Los Angeles. I've had this chus to travel with his son Ari to Poland many, many times. And I just want to invite each and every one of you, if you want to have your life elevated and inspired and changed in a way that you could not possibly imagine, you should come with us on one of these trips. They're just absolutely incredible. Of course, to see you, Rav Tzala Wiedemann, is very chashuv to me. We grew up together in Kew Gardens, and all of the friends that we've made over the years, it's an honor to be here, and I thank again all of you for coming, especially after Yontif. I really didn't think that so many would come, and now I just see my dear cousin, Rav Pesach Ackerman. We're both named after the same Zeta, so I'm honored to be in his presence. I would like to tell you a beautiful story, and as you will see, this story is magnificent, not only in the way it develops, but you know, in America, we have an expression that people put a spin on a story. A spin means how you translate it, what do you learn from it? And none other than Rav Chaim Kanievsky put a spin on this story in such a way that as we now are going to Bench Rosh Chodesh of Cheshvan and we go into a long winter, this is a year that we have an extra month, it's probably the perfect story to hear and to understand what our role should be in the next few months. The story starts with a fellow, let's call him Nachman, who was a yeshivaman here in America, and then went into business and became a very prosperous fellow. And eventually he moved his family to Eretz Yisrael, and he was living in Eretz Yisrael, and he still lives in Eretz Yisrael. But every few years he would come back to New York to do business, and he had a friend, Nati, a cousin rather, who was not from an Israeli, and Nati and his wife Zahava, they moved from Eretz Yisrael to Miami. This fellow Nachman moved from America to Eretz Yisrael because he wanted to have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And his cousin was just the opposite. He wanted to get away from whatever Eretz Yisrael could offer. And he moved with his wife down to Miami. And every time that Nachman would come to visit his cousins, they all knew, obviously, that he can't eat by them. So they would go out to one of the many restaurants in Miami that are kosher, or else they would order takeout food and he would eat on paper or plastic dishes. And that's how they got along every time he came. A few years ago, Nachman comes into the house and he sees that Nati's yarmulke sits on him very comfortably. Now, till now, every time when he came, it was obvious that Nati had just put on a kippah, just put on a yarmulke 5 minutes before Nachman came. But now it seemed like it was there all the time. And he starts looking around the house and he sees mezuzahs on every doorpost. And then he looks at the dining room table and there's a sefer there. I can't understand, like, what happened here? And he says to him, Nati, has something been going on the last couple of years that I don't really know about? And he says, yeah, it's interesting you noticed it so quickly. My wife and I, we became frum, we became religious. Well, he says, I can't believe that. You didn't even tell me that. How did this happen? That's amazing. He said, I'll tell you exactly how it happened. He said, it was a couple years ago. It was late afternoon, very, very hot in Miami. And my wife and I were sitting on the front porch. And all of a sudden, I take a look. There's a whole group of people, well-dressed men with ties and hats and jackets, suits, and they're going down to the water. Now, in Miami, when somebody goes down to the beach, they're not dressed that way. And then the more I looked at them, then I realized, oh my gosh, it's Rosh Hashanah. These people are going to Tashlich. He says, I haven't been to Tashlich in years. And I remember Tashlich as a child. He said, I don't know what possessed me, but I went into my house, I took my kippah, I put it on my head, and I started walking with these people. I walked a little bit on the side. I wanted to see Tashlich. I hadn't seen Tashlich in years. Well, I come down to the water. Everybody's davening there. Everybody's praying. And a guy comes over to me and he says, you know how to read Hebrew? He said, do I know how to read Hebrew? What do you mean? I'm an Israeli. Of course I read Hebrew. So he says, you know, there's a certain prayer that we say here. It's called Tashlich. He said, I remember Tashlich as a child. And he says, well, would you like to read it? He said, yeah, okay. And I said the chapter of whatever they were saying. And then a fellow comes over to me. I never saw this guy. He says to me, did you hear Shosha today? I said, actually, I didn't. He said, would you like to hear it? He says, I happen to be a Baal Tekeah, and I happen to have my Shofar with me. So he says, really? He said, yeah, and I'll be happy to blow for you. He says, all right, I didn't hear Shofar today. It is Rosh Hashanah. So can you imagine, you know, you're sitting by Tashlich, a guy pulls out a Shofar, and he starts blowing 30 koilas, like everybody's looking around, what's going on here? And then he finishes, and this fellow Nati thanks him. And as he's about to part and say goodbye to this guy, the guy says to him, by the way, I just want to tell you, my name is Moshe Katz, and I'm the Baal Tekeah. I'm the one that blows the Shofar in the shul. And Nati was thinking, like, who cares who you are? Like, you know, we're not friends. We're not going to be friends. And he says to him, I just want to tell you again, just remember my name, Moshe Katz. In case you want to have any connection, there's a synagogue that's not far away from here. You can just call the synagogue, you know, and I'll be happy to help you, you know, in any which way. And he thanks him, and he leaves. And he's thinking on the way home, like, who cares what this guy's name was? Like, why is it so important that he had to tell it to me? And he comes home, and his wife says to him, so, how was it? And he tells him that he said the tefillah for Tashlich. And he said, then this guy came over to me, and he wanted to blow Shofar, and I hadn't heard Shofar today. And he blew Shofar, and then at the end, he insisted on telling me that his name was Moshe Katz, and he was the Baal Tekeah. And she looks at him, she says, what did you say his name is? He says, Moshe Katz, why? She says, I don't believe it. Moshe Katz blew Shofar for you today? He says, yeah, why? She says, my Zaidi in Bialystok, he died a long time ago. His name was Moshe Katz. He was the Baal Tekeah in Bialystok. He used to blow Shofar for all the Yidden in Bialystok. I can't believe that all these years later, after he died, somebody named Moshe Katz blew Shofar for you today. The same name as my grandfather. Well, they both got the chills. They just couldn't believe. Like, what were the chances of something like that happening? And the more they spoke about it, the more they realized this was like a simon min hashamayim. So they waited till after Yontif, and then he went to the local Rav of the shul, and he said to his cousin Nachman, the Rav was a wonderful person. He didn't push us. He was slow and sensitive, and he brought us back to Yiddishkeit. Well, Nachman couldn't get over this. He mamish embraces him. He is so happy. He can't believe his friend, his cousin, became frum. And wherever he goes, he's telling everybody this story. And then he comes back to Eretz Yisrael, and one day he comes to Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, and he tells Rabbi Chaim the story, and he says, Rebbe, do you believe that? Isn't that amazing? And Rabbi Chaim says, you know, these things happen every day. We're not always zoicha to see how Hashem orchestrates, but these things happen every single day. So Nachman says, Rebbe, do you mind? I want to ask you a question. Now listen to the question. It's a great question, and the answer is even greater than the question. He says to Rabbi Chaim, if the Rabbeinu Shlalem wanted my cousins to become frum, why didn't he send them Moshe Katz 10 years ago? It's a good question, right? If Moshe Katz, the incident that happened, had such a powerful effect, and if Hashem wanted these people to become frum, why didn't he send them 10 years ago? And Rabbi Chaim's Teretz is gevaldik. And Rabbi Chaim's Teretz is the lesson that we want to talk about tonight. Rabbi Chaim said, the Eibishter waits for a person to take the first step. And once your cousin picked up his kippah and put it on his head and went to Tashlich, that's when Hashem sent him his Moshe Katz. And that's a great lesson in life. And when I heard that story, I heard it in Elul, I was so touched by it, and I'll tell you why. Because at the end of Eicha, in the Medrash, at the end of Eicha, there's a bitter machlokes that the Medrash talks about. A machlokes kaviyachol between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael in Malachi, Shuvu Eli, you return to me. You take the first step. Show me that you care. Do something that's meaningful. V'ashuv aleichem, and then I'll send you Moshe Katz. V'ashuv aleichem, then I'll return to you. But you know what we say to Hashem? No, Hashem, you take the first step. Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecha. You come back to us. You show us a sign. Then v'nashuva, then we'll come back to you. Hashem is telling us, you take the first step. Shuvu Eli, return to me. Show me that you care. V'ashuv aleichem, and then I'll come back to you. And we say, no, no, no. Hashuvenu Hashem elecha, you come back to us. Then v'nashuva. Now tonight, if you're not too tired before you go to sleep, take out your eicha. You'll see something that maybe you never thought about it before. Just open it up to the very last pasuk, and you will see something incredible. The word v'nashuva is missing a letter. What letter is it missing? It's missing the letter hey. Now, the final hey. Now, we can still read it v'nashuva because it's kometz ve'zva. So, it's v'nashuva. So, where is that hey? What happened to that hey? I found it, and I brought it for all of you here tonight. Here's the hey, right here. This is the hey that's missing. Take a look at Eichat, at the end of Dvorim. You'll see. Now, what is so special about this hay that's missing in Vinashuva? And I'm going to tell you something amazing. The Gemara in Menachah says that the Eivishta created the world with the letter hay. Behi baram, behei baram. What does that mean? That means, you see over here there's no floor? That means that when somebody does an Avera and continues doing Averas, he could fall so far down. There's no end to the amount that a person could fall. But a person has to know, especially after we finished Elul and Aseres Yemei Tshuva and Hashanah Rabbah, that this door is open for Tshuva. That's why the hay is shaped the way it is. To show you that a person could fall endlessly, but a person has to know, no matter what he watched this past year, no matter where he went, no matter what he said, no matter what he did, as they say in Brooklyn, forget about it. Now's the time to come into the time to do tshuva. And you know something? That's why, in my opinion, the hay is missing in Vinashuva. Did you find it? Do you see it's missing?
It's here.
No, it's not there. That's only the same pasuk that they say. This is not the pasuk. This is the pasuk. Right here. You see? This is just because we want to end with a good thing. But that's the pasuk. You see? What?
Is it here also?
No, of course not. Look. V'nashuva, k'siv, v'nashuv. You see, v'nashuv, k'siv, it's missing the hay. We read it, v'nashuv, but v'nashuv, hay. I'm sorry for those on the film, I just wanted to show. But we repeat, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva, but that's not the last pasuk. Next to the last pasuk is Hashiveinu. You see, it says v'nashuv, k'siv, and that's the hay is missing. Now, watch this. You will not believe this. You would think a Hasidic Rebbe said this, but you know who says this? The Tur, Shulchan Aruch. When you daven Shemoneh Esrei, what's the fifth bracha of Shemoneh Esrei? You know what the fifth one is? Hashiveinu. You know why? Because Hashiveinu, hey, that's the bracha of tshuva. And not only that, it begins with a hey, Hashiveinu, and it ends with a hey, Horoitza b'tshuva. 5 and 5 is 10. That's the Aseres Yemei tshuva. And that's incredible. And that's what we have to take with us as we step into this long winter, which begins with Cheshvan. Once we start saying Tachlin, once we get back to the regular flow of things, and we'll finish with the 51 days, which began from Rosh Chodesh Elul, we have to know we have to take the first step. That's what the whole Tishrei and Elul and Aseres Yemei Tshuva is all about. Hashem is crying out to us, return to me, I'm waiting for you. I'll send you to Moshe Katz, I'll take care of you, but show me you care. Do something. You do something first, and I'll be there for you. Now the question is, what do you do? So I'm going to give you a suggestion. And that is to become a giving and a caring person. And I want to show you what it means to stop thinking only about yourself, but to think about others. Now watch this. We all know you're not allowed to count Yidden. Chas v'shalom, it could be an ayin hara. So what did the Yidden do? They gave a matzah sashekel. And then they would count the shkolim, and that's how they knew how many yidden were there. If you take a look at the pasuk in Shmoy Slamet, pasuk Yud Beis in Kisisa, it tells us v'nosnu ish koyfe nafshe v'nosnu, and they shall give, or they gave. Okay, v'nosnu. Now, if you close your eyes for a minute and you read the word v'nosnu, vav nun tof nun vav, you can read it frontwards and backwards. Anybody besides Pesi Yakiman know what those words are called? Yeah, I knew you know, but they're called palindromes. Palindrome is a word that you could read frontwards and backwards, like mom, pop, radar, race car, David in Hebrew, Yishai in Hebrew. Now, why David and Yishai Our palindromes, there's got to be a medrash for that. Aviva in English?
And Nosson.
And Nosson, right, that's right. Want to hear the greatest one of all? I told this over. I was speaking the first night of Slichas. I spoke in the Lower East Side. A guy comes over to me. He says, Rabbi Krohn, I want to give you the best palindrome you ever heard in your life. You're not going to believe it. You have to write it down to believe it. Bernie Weinreb. Write it out. You won't believe it. It's unbelievable. Bernie Weinreb. I don't know why he's a palindrome, but he is. Now, has nothing to do with the speech, but I just had to tell it to you. But now the question is, why is Venosnu a palindrome? Why is Venosnu a palindrome? And the Baal HaTurim gives us a fabulous insight. And he tells you, Lo Malach, to tell you, Masha Adam Noisein Litztoka, that which you give to Tztoka, Yachzer Elav, it's going to come back to you. When you give to others, the Eibush is going to make sure that when you need it, it's going to be there for you. If you give of your heart, you give of your time, you give of your talent, you give of your finances, when you need it, somebody's going to be there for you. And we all need it at different times. Nobody gets away scot-free. We're all challenged. Everybody has different challenges and different times of life. And we need somebody to be there for us. Sometimes it's chizuk, sometimes it's time, sometimes it's finances. But whatever you give, v'nosnu, that's the biggest investment that you're making in your life. Loi malach, to teach you, masha adam noisen letztoka yachzer elav, and listen to these words, v'layechsa loi bishvil zeklom. And you're not going to be missing anything because of that. And that's maybe what we have to start doing. I believe, b'lev sholem, that if from tonight on, or tomorrow the latest, you start doing a chesed, a day, for anybody else. I'm not talking for husbands, for wives, for husbands. That you got to do if you know it's good for you. I'm talking about out of the house. You keep a notebook. And even if you do 10 chesedim a day, that's fine. Don't write down 10. Just write down 1. And do not go to sleep, no matter what, until you've done something for somebody else. I tell you, in 40 days, your life will change. And you know how I know? Because it's a pasuk. Hashem Tzilcha, Hashem is your shadow. You start reading Shidduchim for others, people are going to read Shidduchim for your kids. You want to know how to find a Shidduch for your daughter? And I know that this is on video, it's going to go all around the world through TorahAnytime.com. I'm telling you, I did it myself. I have a daughter that had a very difficult time with Shidduchim. Very difficult. And I decided, why am I only making calls for her, for myself? For my own daughter. I should start making calls for others. And every single time I made a call for my daughter, I found somebody else that I made a call for somebody else's daughter. And within less than a month, she met the guy that she was going out with, and she's married to him today, Baruch Hashem, with children and a family. It works. It works. Hashem Tzilcha. It works. No matter what you need, find somebody who needs it and do for them. Write down a chesed a day. I'm telling you, your life will change. You're not going to be missing. And that's what I believe is the first step. Showing the Rabbeinu Shalom that you care about his people. That we're all really brothers and sisters. Now, before I walked in tonight, I had no idea that there are many people here that are affiliated in some way with Karas Deer. This past summer, I went, and I really wish that all of you would go, come with me. Bli Nedar, I want to take the exact same trip next year. It was one of the most fabulous trips ever. And it was to Hungary, to Austria, and to Prague. Absolutely fabulous. And one of the places we went was to Rav Shaila Karastira. And over there I told the people that Rav Shaila was makbid to do a chesed even if somebody was not a yid. He learned it from the Liske Rebbe, from Rav Freeland. When Rav Shaila was a little boy, he became a Yosem. And he was raised by the Liske Rebbe. And the Liske many times would do chasadim, even for Goyim. And it helped Yidden many, many times, years later. But Rav Shaila would say, a person who is a creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to be nice to them. You have to be kind to them. And that's what it's all about. Caring and giving. And I'll show you something amazing. You know, I remember when I was a counselor in Camp Aguda, for many, many wonderful summers. We had a Rav, his name was Rav Yaakov Teitelbaum, who was a great, great tzaddik. And every year on Tisha B'Av, he would learn this medrash with all of us. After the kids were asleep, he would gather the counselors and the waiters together, and he would learn this medrash. Every year he cried. And every year after I got married, and my children were older, and I would learn this medrash with them, I cried with them the same way. It's one of the most moving medrashim. It's in Psichta de Eicha Rabosi, it's in the beginning, in the Hakdama of Eicha, Perik of Dalet. And it tells us that when the Eivishter saw that the first Beis HaMikdash was burning, Kaviyachal Hashem himself started crying. And he said, Oili al Beisi, what's with my house? Bonai Heichanatem, where are my children? Koyanai Heichamatem, where are the Koyanim? And he said, hear me, I'll get the Ovis to daven, this is terrible. And Avraham Avinu came crying to Hashem, please stop, don't let this go on. Don't I have enough tzchusim? I was ready to give my son for the Akedah. Hashem says, no, it's not enough. And Yitzchok says, what about me? I was ready to give my life on the Akedah. Isn't that enough? And Hashem says, no, it's not enough. And then Yaakov says, Hashem, what about me? My life, I had so much tzaras with my children, with Lavan, with Esav. Isn't that enough? And Hashem said, no, it's not enough. And Moshe said, what about me? I gave up 40 years of my life for Klal Yisrael. The only reason I'm not going into Eretz Yisrael is because I hit the rock, not for me, for them. Hashem said, it's not enough. Finally, Rachel comes. And Rachel says, Hashem, you're talking now about the first Beis HaMikdash. Why are you destroying it? Because you're jealous? Because they served other gods? I wasn't jealous. I gave this simonim to my sister. So if I give this simonim to my sister and I wasn't jealous, I was ready to give up Yaakov Avinu, you shouldn't be jealous. And all of a sudden the Medrash says, Miyad nizgalgul rachmav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of a sudden the compassion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was awakened. And he says, Bishvileich, because of you, Rachel, I'm going to bring the Geula. I'm going to bring back the Beis HaMikdash because of you. And he says, Koel Baroma Nishma, that's what Yirmiyah says. I hear a bitter gevein, Rochel Mavaka Abonea, Rochel's crying on her children. She cannot be consoled. Amar Hashem says to her, Mini Koelech Mibechi. Remove your eyes, your voice from crying, and your eyes from tears. There's reward for what you did. You did the greatest thing. You are the greatest giver of all. You're ready to give up your whole future, your whole marriage, your whole connection with Yaakov Avinu to your sister. You are the greatest giver of all. So I want to tell you, this summer I heard a pshat that is so fabulous. The mamash, you have to fasten your seatbelts when you hear this pshat. Rav Noach Isaac Olbaum said it in the name of a sefer called Teferes Uziel. Listen to this brilliant einfall from the Teferes Uziel. All of us here who have learned Shnayim Moichsen and Eilu Metzias and Amafkid, we all know that Aveda is Chayzeres B'simonim. What happens if you lose a hat? You lose a purse? You lose a wallet? And it's lost and you want to get it back. So you've got to give a simon. It had a tear on the right side. It had a red stripe in it. Or whatever simon you can show. And if you have the right simon, Aveda is chayzeres b'simonim. And Aveda, something that you lost, will come back b'simonim. Zok de Helig at Tferes Uziel. He says, what was the greatest Aveda that Klal Yisrael had? It's the Beis HaMikdash. How did we get it back? Chayzeres, it came back b'simonim. With the simonim that Rachel gave to Leah. Isn't that genius? Aveda chayzeres b'simonim. That Aveda came back b'simonim. And if we want the Geula, that's really what we want more than anything else. We have to be like Rachel. We have to be giving people that care for others. So I want to tell you a story that happened to me. And it mamish changed my life. It happened to me the first time I was in Manchester in England. I remember, I love going to England. I love going to many, many of these places. Just the most wonderful people, especially in Manchester, Stamford Hill, and Golders Green. It's just absolutely wonderful, wonderful people. And I was about to give a talk. There were 500 women waiting in an auditorium. And just as I'm about to leave the home where I was staying, somebody says to me, you got to make a stop on the way. I said, what do you mean I got to make a stop? There's people waiting. No. There's this woman who Nebuch is in a wheelchair. She's paralyzed. She has MS and she cannot walk anymore. She's only in a wheelchair. And she's asking that on the way, just stop and just to talk to her for 2 minutes. That's all she wants. 2 minutes. Okay, how do you say no to a woman in a wheelchair? Okay, and she said it's only 2 minutes. And they said, I want you to know she's brilliant. That's what they said to me. And she gives shiurim. And people follow her all the time because she's really a very incredible person. Her name is Rebbetzin Chavi Wachshel. Okay, so I come into the house and there's a big dining room table. There's 25 women sitting around the table waiting for her to come in to give a shiur. So far she hadn't come in yet. And then I see now that there's a living room and there's a curtain. And then they draw the curtain and she comes. Somebody pushes her in a wheelchair, and my heart fell. A young woman, I doubt if she was 40 at the time, and full of life, but you just see in her eyes so sad at her terrible, terrible illness, which is progressing. And she says to me, Rabbi Krohn, thank you for coming, but I need you to do me a favor. And I'm thinking, like, first of all, I don't even know what she wants. But no matter how am I going to say no in front of all these people, but I still don't know what she wants. And she says, you know, here in Manchester, the Manchester Rosh Hashiva Rav Segel lives here. And he comes to give me chizuk for my illness. And I'm able to type and I write down all the things that he tells me. And she says, Rav Brevda came to my home. And he also tells me. And all these things that people tell me from secular sources and from sources, I write it all down to give myself strength in these difficult times. And I'm writing a book of all these things that I've learned from other people. And I want you please to write me a letter for the book. I'd never done that before. And I said, you know, you need a big tzaddik. You need somebody that's very choshev. I feel very uncomfortable to write a letter for somebody else's book. And she says, please, I listen to your CDs. I read your books. Please, it's going to mean so much to me. I couldn't say no. I couldn't say yes. I didn't read the book yet. So I figured this is how I'm going to say no. I figured I'll tell her to send me the book. And then in New York, when I'm on the phone, so over the phone, you know, I'll tell her I just can't do it. But to her face, I couldn't do it. So I say to her, you know, I haven't read the book. She said, it's no problem. She was one step ahead of me. She had the book ready. You know, she had it in manuscript form. She said, here it is. Take it and just read it and then get back to me. I said, okay, I'll start reading it on the plane and I'll call you once I get back to New York. I started reading it on the plane and I'm telling you, I couldn't stop crying. Every page is so painful. How she describes how the illness is getting worse. And I think one of the most painful things that she describes is her daughter's eighth grade graduation. Now, all of you who have had daughters in the eighth grade know that when the mothers come in, everybody looks so pretty, everybody looks so nice, and the mothers are proud of the kids, and the kids are proud of the mothers. And she said she's being wheeled in a wheelchair. And her daughter's walking alongside. And she knows that her daughter's humiliated. And she's humiliated for the daughter. And the daughter's humiliated for the mother. And it's just an awful, awful scene. It's just terrible. And then she writes something near the end of the book that mama shook me to the core. It's not her thought. And she got it from a secular source. But I'd like to read it to you. Because I think it is such a great insight to what life is all about. And she writes like this. Any fool can count the seeds in one apple. You don't have to be a big chacham to count the seeds in an apple. Tonight you go home, you cut an apple, open it, you'll see five seeds, whatever is there. But only the highest power, Hashem, can count the apples that can grow from one seed. And that's brilliant. Any fool can count the seeds in one apple. But only the highest power, Hashem, can count the apples that can grow from one seed. Imagine you read a shidduch to somebody who needs a shidduch desperately. And then that person gets married. And that's it. Then, you know, everybody parts their ways. And this person grows and has a family of children and grandchildren. And maybe even great-grandchildren. That's all the apples from one seed. What happens when you give that guy who's desperate for a job and you find him a job? And then he has self-esteem all of a sudden. And he's able to build a family and build parnosa. And we know that the Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us when there's no parnosa, there's so many shalom bias problems. But now that you gave him the job and he's able to flourish in his business, he feels good about himself. And he's got shalom bias and he's got wonderful kids because he's able to spend time with his kids because he's making money during the daytime and he's able to be home with his kids at night. Look what you did. You planted one seed. You got him a job. You made 2-3 calls for him. And look at all the apples that grow from it. But don't we know people who have put their arms around us when we needed it most and carried us through difficult times? I know, my cousin knows, that my father passed away when I was 21. Very difficult to be a male when you're 21. Nobody wants to take a kid who's 21. I would walk into a house and people would take a look, especially the grandmother. Oh, you look so young. I would say, well, the baby's also young, you know. So sometimes it worked, you know, but... I want to say something. I don't know why I'm telling you this, because I know this is on video and it's going to go all over the world, as I told you. But just to show you how bad things can get. Do you know, I am humiliated to tell you this, but, you know, now it's so many years later that I could talk about it. That there was actually one time when I walked into a house and the guy thought Rabbi Krohn was coming. He thought Rabbi Krohn was my father, who had passed away. And I came in to do the bris. He took one look at me. I think I was 22 at the time. And he said, you are not touching my baby. Go home. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means to walk into a house? Right? You're coming with your bris bag. Everybody is standing around. And you are made to feel less than dirt. Because you are not touching my baby. That's awful. But then when you have people who in those difficult times give you chizuk, and I can just tell you, again, my dear cousin knew my mother very well. You know what my mother was? It's unbelievable. I always talk about it. When I would come home and I would say to her, Ma, are there any calls? You know what she said? Not yet. Those were the two of the greatest words I ever heard in my life. You know what not yet meant? Not no. Nobody wants you. Not yet means it's not yet, but one day they're going to call you. You're going to be so busy you won't even know what to do first. That's what not yet meant. That's a great mother. That's a great person who gives chizuk. We all go through difficult challenges. And somebody who says, don't worry, you're going to be able to make it because I made it through that. And that's one thing that we once spoke about, how you become a person of bracha. You go through something and you help a person. That's what Vinosnu is all about. That's what giving is all about. So I got to tell you this unbelievable story. This past winter, I was in the Five Towns, and a fellow, Rabbi Mordechai Yaffe, came over to me, and he said he had to tell me a great story. Now, most people tell me that, and I'm a nice guy. I listen to everybody, but 98 out of 100 you can't use, right? You know, they are under the Maggid's table, right? But you know, this story is surely meaningful to that person. There's no question. But, you know, I always try to get a story that's meaningful to everybody who will hear it and everybody who will read it, not only to the person to whom it happened. And he tells me an amazing story. Many of you know that in Toronto, which is in Canada, actually in Ontario, 20 miles south of Toronto, there's a city called Hamilton. And in the early 1950s, there was a Rav, his name was Rav Mordechai Green, who was the Rav of the Orthodox Shul in Hamilton, Ontario. It was a small little place, and most of the young couples were not going there anymore. And the shul was dying out. He was a short Yid, a wonderful person who spoke Yiddish, and perhaps that's why he got the job, because most of the Balabatim in that shul spoke Yiddish. But the conservative temple and the reform, you know, palace, everybody was going there because they were beautiful buildings. And he realized he better build a gorgeous Orthodox shul or else nobody's coming. So it's early 1950s and he goes into the Royal Bank of Canada and he says he'd like to speak to the bank manager. And then a tall, good-looking Goyish fellow, an Episcopalian fellow named Mr. Amy, says, how could I help you? Sit down, let me talk. Let me talk to you, tell me what you need. And he says, Mr. Amy, I would like to build a synagogue, an Orthodox synagogue here in Hamilton. First, he didn't say the word Orthodox. He said, I'd like to build a synagogue and I need $150,000. Would you give me the money so I could build this synagogue? Now, he didn't say Orthodox the first time because he was afraid, because he knew that Mr. Amy probably knows all the people in the neighborhood. He knows the Orthodox don't have money. How's he going to get paid? So he said, what do you want to do? He said, I want to build a Jewish house of worship. Again, not saying the Orthodox word. Finally, he said, what denomination do you want to build? No, he had no choice. He said, I'm an Orthodox rabbi, and I want to build an Orthodox synagogue. And when he said that, Mr. Amy just stopped and just stared at him, just looked at him. And Rabbi Green noticed that tears are coming down Mr. Amy's eyes, and he's crying. And he says to him, Rabbi, I'm going to give you the money, and you're going to be able to build a synagogue, but I want to tell you why. He said, at the end of the 1920s, I grew up in Timmins, Ontario. I looked it up. Timmins is 400 miles north of Hamilton. He said, at the end of the 1920s, my father was killed in a fire. And we were left orphans. We were left alone with my mother, who was a widow, my brothers, and my sister. We had nothing. He said, you know, in all these small towns, they have a general store. And this general store sells everything, hardware, clothes, food. It was owned by an Orthodox Jew, Sam Bukovetsky. And one day after the fire, Sam Bukovetsky comes to my house and he says to my mother, Mrs. Amy, as long as I own this store, your children will have clothes. You never have to pay me. I will never ask you for money. Come in, just take anything that you need. If you ever want to pay, you could pay, but I will never ask you for money. And then he said, Mrs. Amy, as long as I own this store, your children will have food. I will never ask you. Come in every morning and take what you need. I will never mark it down. I trust you. Whatever you need, you could take. And Mr. Amy, who's crying now, says, the only reason my family survived was because of that Orthodox Jew. Eventually, we were able to build ourselves up, and I was able to go to college. I became a bank manager. He said, when I saw you walking into the bank, you looked like an Orthodox Jew. And suddenly it occurred to me, you know, it's about time I paid back Sam Bukovetsky. And when you said you were an Orthodox rabbi who wants to build an Orthodox synagogue, I knew that God sent you. Imagine that. So today, this shul is still there. A big, beautiful shul, Rav Mordechai Green, son of Daniel. He now is the Rav of that shul. And I'll tell you what's absolutely amazing. I told you that this Rav Mordechai Yaffe was the one who told me the story from the five towns. Today he's the Menahel of a school called May, M-A-Y, Masifta Ateres Yaakov, named after Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. He's the Menahel of 300 boys. You know what he tells me? He said, you know why I'm from today? Because of that shul in Hamilton. I grew up in Hamilton. My father didn't let me go to a yeshiva because he was a Holocaust survivor. He was afraid to send me out of town. So I couldn't go to yeshiva. I did not step into yeshiva, he says, till I was 17. And then I went to Neir Shul in Toronto, and then I learned with Rabbi Zweig, and I learned with others, and I went to Eretz Yisrael. He says, I always tell the boys in the Masifta Ateres Yaakov, look at me. I am a menahel of 300 boys. I started learning when I was 17. Imagine what you guys could do, and you started in the first grade. That's amazing. Look at all the apples. Look at all the apples that Sam Bukovetsky has in his schar in Gan Eden. He planted seeds. How much did it cost him to give clothes to that family? How much did it cost to give food to that Goyesha family? But because of what he did today, years later, people are from in Hamilton. There's a thriving shul in Hamilton. And there's a menahel who's a menahel of 300 bachrim of a yeshiva. That's incredible. And that's what I told you before about Rav Shaila. Well, no matter who you could do a favor, you should do a favor. Write it down. Write it down. Keep a cheshbon. And you know why you should write it down? Because if you keep a notebook, then you're not going to stop. You know, if you don't keep a notebook, yeah, I did a favor today. Tomorrow I'll do two of them. I didn't do today or whatever. If you have a notebook, you cannot go to sleep until you do something. And I'm telling you, three-day Yom Tovim are very difficult. Who are you going to call? Who are you going to lend money to? How are you going to give somebody a ride, you know, on Yontif, right? Well, you'll figure it out. I know people who do it. They figure it out. They buy people aliyahs on Yom Tov. That's what they do. They don't tell people that that's the reason they're doing it, but they buy people aliyahs. They'll spend anything. And you know what's the biggest investment, the best investment of all? Hag Ben Galila, because he can give four people a kibbutz, right? Doesn't even cost like Mafti Yoyna, and you make four people happy. It's unbelievable. It's a great investment, Hag Ben Galila. But anyway, but the point is, you think of creative ways to do a chesed to somebody else. And that's what Venosnu is all about. I want to tell you about a person that you probably don't even know. But to think about what this person did. His name is Herschel Weber. He grew up in Williamsburg. And he told me the story himself. He was learning in the Polish Shtiebel on Ross Street. You remember Ross Street, right? In Williamsburg. He told me one day he's going home for lunch. And all of a sudden he sees a man in the street. And the guy says, "Oi, may I have a pain?" And the guy falls to the floor. And he's yelling to bring a doctor. Herschel Weber is yelling to bring a doctor, the police, or the fire department. And everybody's yelling and screaming because nobody knows first aid or emergency medical care. And finally the police come, but by that time Herschel told me he saw the guy die right in front of his eyes. And he said, you know what was the most painful thing? That he heard one police officer say to the other, "If we would have got here 5 minutes ago, we could have saved this guy." So he decides on his own that from now on, he is going to go to Red Cross. He is going to learn emergency medicine in his kollel. He's going to have a little oxygen tank. And there were two other people. I just want to mention the names. Mr. Galant, who had a cleaning store, and Mr. Kaff, who had a bakery. They also learned emergency first aid. And now, anytime that there was an emergency in Williamsburg, they knew. Call Herschel Weber. He tells me months go by. And one morning, a woman who's close to 90 wakes up. And her husband, she wants to talk to her husband, but he doesn't respond. And she shakes him, and he's not moving. And she realizes, oh my gosh, he's not alive. He died in his sleep. And she panics, and she's yelling and screaming. And she runs to the window, and she says, "I think my husband is dead. Please come help somebody." So a crowd gathers, it's early in the morning, and somebody yells, "Get Herschel Weber." And Herschel Weber told me he comes running with his oxygen tank. He takes a look at this guy. Never, the guy died 5 hours ago. There's nothing you can do. And this poor woman is sitting and crying. And he sat down next to her and he made her feel comfortable in any which way that he could. By now, a big crowd had gathered out outside this apartment house. You know, the 2-3 floor tenement houses that was that time prevalent in Williamsburg. And I'm going to tell to you exactly how he told it to me. I didn't want to write it this way because, you know, the written word is forever, and it's just too horrible. But even though that I'm on video, I'm still going to tell it to you exactly, just so you should know, you know, how cruel sometimes a person could be. He told me he walked downstairs. Now there was a big crowd, and suddenly he hears one yid say to the other, "Zez dem shigena Herschel, etim gehargit. You see that crazy guy Herschel? He killed him." Now, of course, that was dumb and stupid to say that. But what they meant was, well, they should have got a doctor, or Herschel should have got a doctor right away. But of course it was ridiculous, because the guy died 5 hours ago, there was nothing he could do. But when he heard that somebody said about him that he killed someone, he told me he started crying, he went home, he could not stop crying a whole day. He was so hurt, and he was so humiliated that another yid should say that about him, that the next day he went to the Satmar Rebbe. And he said, "Rebbe," and he told him the whole story. And he said, "Rebbe, isn't it about time that we got an organization that could know emergency medicine to help people in a time of need?" And the Rebbe says, "Bring me a Shari Tshuva." Now you have to look this up because you're not going to believe it. I want you to look up Shari Tshuva, Shar Gimel, Ois, Ayin, Aleph. Take a look at it. Shari Tshuva, Shar Gimel, Ois, Ayin, Aleph. Listen, I want to read it to you. As the Satmar Rebbe read it to Herschel Weber. V'toy v'nochein ma'oid, and it's good and proper. Liyos b'chol ir v'ir, that should be in every city. Misnadvim ba'am, volunteers. Mina maskilim, get intelligent people. Don't get dumb people. Get intelligent volunteers. Liyos nechoinim umuzumonim, they should be ready. L'chol devar hatzola. And the Rebbe said, name it hatzola. That's how hatzola started. from this Shaarei Teshuva and this Heschel Weber and this Satmar Rebbe, is there anybody here that doesn't know people whose lives were saved because of Atzala? Imagine the apples that Heschel Weber has. You know why? Because he took the first step. He was like that Israeli Nazi. What would we do if we saw somebody die? We'd have nightmares for 3 nights and we'd go on with life. That's not what he did. He decided he's going to learn first aid. Now, he wasn't the one who saved this person. I don't know how many people he did save, but he took the first step. He did something. David just said, you did something? Oh, I'm going to give you schar that nobody has schar like you. Look at all the apples all over the whole world, Hatzalah. Hatzalah's world famous. Why? One man. Heschel Weber, he took the first step. That's what it's all about. Taking the first step, and then Hashem sends you the Moshe Katz. So I want to tell you some of the greatest Hatzalah stories. It's unbelievable. My favorite Hatzalah story happened Yom Kippur many years ago in Flatbush. It was very hot, late afternoon. They were in the middle of the Avodah in this small shul in Flatbush. And this old man, really, perhaps he shouldn't have been fasting, but he's an El Chayyid. How could you not fast? And what happens is, all of a sudden, during the Avodah, he just collapses, and people thought that he died. Now, any of you who are involved in Hatzalah know that when there's a question of somebody's life and death, it's called a code blue. So a code blue goes out, and all the guys from all the shuls of Flatbush, they whip off their talisim, and they all come running to this shul. And it's so crowded, it's so hot, and they part the ways, and they bring in a stretcher, and this guy's mamash on the floor. They pick him up, they put him on the stretcher, and they bring him out to the street. And when he's out in the street, he has some fresh air, and he opens up his eyes, and he sees 30 guys standing around in white kitlach. And then he says, "Bin ich schon oben?" He thought, "Am I upstairs already?" He thought he died, right? He sees all the malachim around him. And the truth is, they are malachim. But here's the most hysterical story that I think for Hatzalah. You know, the dispatchers, they know where the call is coming from. That's very, very important, because sometimes a person can be in such panic because of the situation, they can't even say the address. So they get a call from Spanish Harlem, and this guy's yelling and screaming, and they don't know what it is going on, and they're trying to talk to him. They can't understand him, but they know somebody's in trouble. And they're not going to send only one unit to Spanish Harlem, right? So they send 3 units, right? Because who knows what's going on there, right? So 3 units come running to this apartment in Spanish Harlem, and they run up and they open up the door, and this Chinese guy is yelling and screaming at them. And they're trying to ask him, "What is going on? What's the emergency?" And he holds up a carton of milk. Now, by mistake, he bought Chalav Yisrael. And Hatzalah advertises on Chalav Yisrael boxes, right? And they had their number on it. So the milk was sour. So he was complaining to Hatzalah that the milk was sour. And that's why they couldn't understand it, because he was speaking Chinese. So that's why they sent 3 units to save the guy from his sour milk. But I want to tell you one more Hatzalah story, which is very important, and then we'll get back to the talk, which you should know. You should never have to know. You should never have to need this. But it's incredible. This happened with a friend of mine, Dov Rowe. Dov Rowe eventually was the head of Hatzalah in Queens. But this is when he first started. He was coming back on one of these flights from Eretz Yisrael that leaves at 1 o'clock in the morning and comes in, you know, like 6 in the morning here. So it's 3-4 hours into the trip. Everybody's sleeping. It's quiet. It's over the ocean. It's at night. And all of a sudden, the pilot gets on the speaker, loudspeaker, says, "There's a cardiac issue on board. Do we have a doctor on board?" Now, he was not a doctor, so he didn't respond. But a minute later, the pilot again says, "There's a serious cardiac issue. Is there a doctor on board?" So he figures, okay, listen, if the doctor's not responding, he's Hatzalah. So he'll go, he'll tell them to call Hatzalah in New York. Maybe they can tell him what to do. So he runs up and he says, "Look, I'm a medic. I'm not really a doctor, but why don't you call the dispatcher, Hatzalah in Williamsburg, you know, and then you were able to get up to the pilot." So the pilot calls Hatzalah. Hatzalah says, "Who is this?" He said, "It's El Al." "Yeah, El Al." He slams the phone down. "Like, what is this, a joke?" He didn't believe him. He says, "No, tell him I'm Q9. He calls him back. He says he's Q9. And then listen what the dispatcher said. It's unbelievable. He knew that they needed epinephrine. He said, "Wake up every single woman on that flight and go through their purse. Because when Jewish women travel from Eretz Yisrael to America, their purses are a walking drugstore. No matter what medication you need, it's going to be in one of their purses. And sure enough, that's what they did. They woke up every woman. They found epinephrine. They saved this guy. And as they landed in Halifax, which is the first area that you could land of, you know, from coming across the Atlantic, and the pilot explained that there had been a cardiac issue. That's why they had to land. The lady cardiologist who slept through the whole thing said, "Oh, I'm a cardiologist. Is there anything that I can be of help here?" So if you're ever on a plane and you need medication, you know where to find it. Unless you go upstairs, which I saw for the first time in my life. It's unbelievable. Mr. Katz, so sein gesund. You see in his stand, he's got every medicine that you can think of. It's unbelievable, besides candies as well. So he's well taken care of. So I just want to tell you just this one thing. Maybe two things. And then we'll close. You know, I have a very, very dear friend. His name is Rabbi Yehuda Zakatinsky. He's very involved in Kiruv. He has this wonderful organization called Hashivenu. Hashivenu is especially for young people who come back, Balei Tshuva, that come back from Eretz Yisrael, from Yeshiva, and now they don't have a network for Shidduchim and for jobs, you know, like all the other Frum kids have. And he helps them. He's very involved in Kiruv in many, many different ways. So recently, a certain Rosh Yeshiva called him, which I can't say who. And he says, "You know, I have a son that's going off to Derech, and he's a certain college. Would you be maskim to go learn with him in that college, just to talk to him?" And Rabbi Zakatinsky says, "Of course, I never say no. I always, if anybody ever asks me to do Kirov, of course I'll be happy to do it. Just give me his name and tell me the college and I'll go there." And then he says to Rosh Yeshiva, "But I just want to tell you why I never say no." He says, "You know, I grew up in New Haven, Connecticut. And shortly after my bar mitzvah, I was sent to a big yeshiva, which I don't want to say the name." He said, "When I came to that yeshiva, you know, I came from New Haven. I didn't really have the background that many of the boys in the yeshiva had. And I was beginning to fall behind. And after 2 or 3 months, I was getting very despondent. And I felt very uncomfortable that I couldn't catch up. I needed somebody to learn with me extra. So one Shabbos, I went to the Beis Medrash. There were a bunch of older guys learning. And I go over to one of the guys and I say, 'You know, I'm falling behind. Is there any way that you could learn with me?' And the fellow said to me, 'Oh, I'm sorry, today is Shabbos. And I have a special chavrus on Shabbos. And we're learning a mesechta that we don't learn during the week. So I'm sorry, I just don't have time.' He said, 'Okay, I was hurt, but I went to another guy.' And the other guy said, 'You know, it's Shabbos. And on Shabbos, I learn Iyun. I'm learning a different peirik. And you know, it's short Shabbosim in the winter. I got to take advantage of every minute. I'm sorry, I can't learn with you.' And this went on to a third guy and a fourth guy. And Rabbi Zakatinsky says to this Rosh Yeshiva, 'I decided that if the fifth guy, whoever he is, if he doesn't learn with me Sunday, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. If nobody has time for a younger bacher, then I don't want to be here.' He said, I went over to the fifth guy and he put his arm around me and he said, 'Of course you want to learn. What do you want to learn? Let's learn together.' And we learned and it was wonderful. He made me feel so special. And then the next Shabbos, he came over to me and he said, 'Remember we learned last Shabbos, you want to learn again?' He said, 'I felt so special. And I swore to myself for the rest of my life, if anybody ever asks me to learn with them, I will never say no.' And he said, 'Rosh Yeshiva, you know who that person was?' He says, 'That was you.' He said, 'What?' He said, 'Yeah, you don't remember. You know why you don't remember? Because you are kind to everybody. I was just one of many that you did that to.' And then Rabbi Zakatinsky told me, 'Look at that. He helped me years ago. And now I'm helping his son. That's Venosnu.'" Rabbi Zakatinsky didn't put this together of Venosnu, but I'm telling you that that's what Venosnu is all about. That Rosh Yeshiva, as a bocher, 18, 19-year-old boy, gave time to a kid who he probably thought he'd never see again in his life. Rabbi Zakatinsky told me, and he's not embarrassed, so I could tell it to you, he came into that yeshiva wearing a white suit on Shabbos. That's what he thought. This is Shabbos, Dikah Begadim. Not black. Shabbos is white, right? Purity. That's how far he was from understanding what a yeshivisha dress code was all about. But he made it. And he made it. And now he's helping that Rosh Hashiva's son. That's incredible. That's what Vinosnu is all about. You're not going to be missing anything because of that. So I just want to end with this fabulous story and understand it in a certain way. And really, this story will change your life forever. Just get ready. Most of us here are old enough to remember Vietnam. Vietnam was one of the worst fiascos in American military history. We lost thousands and thousands of soldiers. You could look it up. There was a Captain Plum, P-L-U-M-B. He was a Navy jet fighter pilot in the Navy. And he flew the most sophisticated planes, the F-4s. And he was stationed on a huge warship called the Kitty Hawk. And he flew 74 missions. He had one more mission left. They're all called sorties. He flew 74 sorties. He had one more left. Then he was going to come back to the Kitty Hawk. 5 days later, he was going to come to America and finish his tour of duty in the Navy. But that 75th mission, that plane was shot down over Hanoi. The plane exploded. He was wearing a parachute. The parachute opened. He landed in enemy territory. He fell in enemy territory. He was a prisoner of war for 5 long years. And he was tortured every day of those 5 years. Finally, after the war, he came back. He was rehabilitated. And then he became a very famous speaker. And he started speaking about his experiences all over the country, all over the United States. And he tells over that one night he was in Kansas City. He was in a small restaurant eating alone. And there was another person eating alone at another table across the way. And all of a sudden that person starts staring at Captain Plum. It's very uncomfortable when you're alone and a person is staring at you. And he's tried to eat the food and he looks up, the guy's still staring at him. Finally, the guy who was staring at him came over to him and he said, "Are you Captain Plum?" He said, "Yes, sir, but how do you know that?" He said, "And you flew 74 missions. You were on the Kitty Hawk. Is that not true?" He said, "Yes, sir. How do you know that?" He said, "On the 75th mission, the plane exploded. And your life was saved by the parachute. Is that not true?" He says, "Yes, sir, but how do you know that?" And the guy says, "I was a sailor on the Kitty Hawk. And I packed your parachute." Well, the guy could not believe it. He said, "You were on the Kitty Hawk?" And they begin talking, and of course, he begins to realize, of course, that the guy was there. And that's what he did. He packed parachutes, and he packed his parachute. And Captain Plum says to him, "I want you to know I have prayed for you and your family so many times. I had no idea who you were. I never even thought that I would see you. I can't believe, I can't thank you enough. You saved my life." And then he writes, when he left the restaurant, he felt awful. He said, "Because I bet I saw that sailor 100 times on the Kitty Hawk, but not once did I say good morning to him. Not once did I ever say thank you to those guys. You know why? Because I was a jet fighter pilot. He was only a sailor. But he packed my parachute. He packed my parachute, and I owed him a thank you. I owed him the courtesy." And he said, "How many people in our lives pack our parachutes? Our parents, our rebbeim, our rabbonim, our friends who were there when we needed it. Do we ever thank them for packing our parachute? We feel we're the jet fighter pilot. It's coming to us. Yeah, what were parents created for? Just to serve their kids, right? But when you become parents, then you realize it's not exactly that way, right? We don't appreciate those people who pack our parachutes. And maybe that's what we have to do. We have to make a call before Rosh Chodesh to some parent, to some Rebbe, to some friend who packed your parachute in a difficult time in your life." And I was wondering, is there a Yiddish makor for this idea? And then I remembered something that happened to me when I was 15 years old. When I was 15 years old, my father, Shalom, he was a great Talmud Chacham. He wasn't a Rav in a shul, but as much as he could, every spare moment, he always had a sefer. He would learn with our mutual uncle, Uncle Pinny, many, many times. And he was a big Talmud Chacham. Every Tuesday night, he would go to a shir in Manhattan, given by Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik. The shir was given in a shul called Mariah. And all the RCA Rabbonim, they would all go. The place was packed. Why? because Rabbi Yosher Ber would give a shiur for an hour in Masechta, and then for 15, 20 minutes he would talk on the Parsha, and every Rav had his drasha for that Shabbos. It was a great system. So the place was packed. And one night my father says to me, Pesach, you got to come with me. I want you to hear how Rabbi Yosher Ber gives a shiur. So I said, okay, fine, I came. And I came with my father and my grandfather. And I still remember that they were learning Masechta Megillah. I have no idea what daf they were learning. But if I live to be 160, I will never, ever forget what Rabbi Yosher Ber said that night on Parshas Vayishlach. Listen to this. He read two psukim in the Torah. Bereishis Lamed Hei, Pasuk Ches and Tes. Vatomas Devaira Meinekes Rivka. Bereishis Lamed Hei, Ches and Tes. Vatomas Devaira Meinekes Rivka. The nursemaid of Rivka died. Her name was Devaira. Vatikover Mitachas Lebeis El Tachas Aloin Vayikor Shmoi Aloin Bachus. Yaakov gave her a very big hesped and he cried. And he called that place Alon Bachus, the place, the plain of crying. And then the pasuk tells us, Vayera Lekim El Yaakov Oid, Hashem came back to Yaakov. Rabbi Yosher Ber asked, who's the Vayera? Why is Yaakov giving a hesped? Why is Hashem coming back to Yaakov? What's going on in this pasuk? And Rabbi Yosher Ber said something so ingenious, and for years I didn't repeat it, because I didn't know if it was scientifically true, but now I know it's true. Because I did the research, and I have a friend who lives not far from here, Rabbi Danny Center. He has a brother who's a Rav, Rabbi Ari Center. Rabbi Danny Center raises bees. He has hives of 80,000 bees. And he told me that every word that Rabbi Yosher Ber said is true, scientifically and biologically. The word Devaira means a bee. And you know what kind of bee? A queen bee. And what a queen bee does is it goes over many, many different flowers. And it has to draw nectar from a flower and bring it back to the hive. But it never, ever lands on a flower unless it knows that it could get nectar from that flower. It'll just fly over the flowers, but it has a certain sense. It knows the aroma of that flower that has the nectar. That's the only one it's going to land on. Sok Rabbi Yosher Ber, Rivka, Dvaira, who was the bee, so to speak. She was raised in the house of Lavan, Rishoyim, Besuel, Rishoyim, bigger liars than the other. One bigger than the other. But she knew Rivka. That's the one I'm going to land on. That's the one that I could develop. And she was the one who packed Rivka's parachute. She was the one who made Rivka special. And Yaakov knew this is the woman who packed my mother's parachute. That's why the Ramban says that as the Devaira got older, Yaakov Avinu said to her, come with us. We're leaving Lavan. We'll take care of you the rest of your days. And that's why when she passed away, he gave her a big hesped. You know why? Because not only did Devaira pack his mother's parachute, but Rivka packed Yaakov's parachute. Because Yitzchak thought Esau was the tzaddik, not Yaakov. And because Hashem saw that this man acknowledges those who packed his parachutes, the Abishah said, I'm coming back the second time. Because those who have Akoras HaToyv, that's who I want to be close to. Vayera Elikim El Yaakov Oid. Hashem comes to Yaakov a second time. And that's maybe one of the greatest things of a Nusnu that we can do. To give thanks. To give recognition. It's so hard for people to do that. Because we feel we're lowering ourselves. Just like Captain Plum felt, I'm going to say hello to a sailor. The guy saved your life. You didn't realize it. But we never know who we're going to need in the future. You have to be kind and friendly and giving to everyone in Klal Yisrael. Because we're all brothers and sisters. And when you give to others, you never know when you're going to get it back. We have to remember who packed our parachutes. And as we go now into Cheshvan, a long, wonderful, elevating winter. You know, many people say that Cheshvan is bitter. Rosh Chodesh, when we're going to bench Rosh Chodesh, we're going to say Mar Cheshvan. Mar means bitter. Why is Cheshvan bitter in some people's eyes? Because the Mabul started in Cheshvan. Because Sarah Imenu died in Cheshvan. And because there's no Yom Tovim in Cheshvan. But you know what other Mefarshim say? Mar means master. Mar, the master. In Cheshvan, the first Beis HaMikdash was completed. The Bnei Yisoschar writes, the third Beis HaMikdash is going to be inaugurated. In Cheshvan. Cheshvan is the time that we don't have the Yom Tovim. Why? Because we've all got the Hashpah of everything that came now, and now we're preparing for winter. And I just want to end with this fabulous, fabulous word. And this you could all say at the table Friday night. And make sure to say it. Because it's in Perik Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Aleph in Bereishis. And it's so perfect for the beginning of the month of Cheshvan. The Pasuk tells us, Vayara Lekim Eskola Sherosa Vehine Toiv Ma'oid. The Eibishter saw everything that he did, and it was wonderful. And the Medrash says, Ma'oid is Adam. What does that mean? Ma'oid, Mem Aleph Dalad, is Aleph Dalad Mem. So Rav Huttner asked, the Medrash has to tell me that Ma'oid is Adam, that it's the same letters. Every child looks at the letters. See, Mem Aleph Dalad is Aleph Dalad Mem. What's the lesson here? And he said something ingenious that should be so invigorating for all of us. He said, everything in life can be measured. The distance between here and the sun can be measured. The distance from earth to the bottom of the sea can be measured. The only thing that cannot be measured is the potential in man. Adam is ma'oid, very. There's no limit. That's the pshat. Adam is ma'oid. So in this Heilige Shabbos of Parshas Bereishis, where we read about Adam and ma'oid, and we know we're going into a long winter, it's not mar bitter, it's mar the master. Now you make a commitment from this Shabbos on, from this week on, I'm going to do chesed. I'm going to be v'nosno. I'm going to learn more. I'm going to daven slower. I'm not going to worry about an impression that I'm making on anybody else. It's just me and Hashem. That's what it's all about. That's what the whole achana of the 51 days from the beginning of Elul to Hashanah Rabbah is all about. David should help that we should take these lessons seriously. And we should become giving people. So that the Eibishter should give us back that Aveda with the simonim, right? The simonim that Rachel gave. That's the simon of chesed. Let's become giving people. We should be zeichah to see the geula. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening. Shabbos.
TorahAnytime.com sends cameras out day and night to video and audio record the best Torah classes around. We then make them available to you for free. So what are you waiting for? Watch, listen to, and download lectures on TorahAnytime.com today.